Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of October 1st, 2019. And this is officially episode number 409. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And yes, it is October already. It seems weird that we're already in October. Baseball is officially over as far as the regular season is concerned. We're starting playoffs tonight. Right now, as we speak, or as I speak, unless you're talking. You shouldn't be talking. You should be listening. But anyway, yes, it's fall. And wow. Well, not officially. Well, officially, I guess. And we are live here on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. And what else? Today is actually, now that I think of it, October 1st is the, well, I guess it was this morning. Was the official beginning. I don't know who's out there. If you're out there, let me know. Today is the official beginning of the Storm the Bermuda Triangle event. It can't swallow all of us. I didn't see that in the news this morning. There's 20,000 people who said they were going. Are you there? I don't know. I didn't go. I didn't sign up for that. But today was a kickoff for that, a little lesser known event. I never did find out what happened with the Loch Ness event. If anybody showed up to Storm Loch Ness looking for Nessie or some eels or whatever they were looking for. But anyway, yes, it is October 1st. It's the silly season, as I like to call it. It is officially the Halloween season. And, that's what we live for. We love Halloween. If you're into the paranormal at all, you must like Halloween. It's a requirement. It's a requirement. They make you sign that when you get into the paranormal. Not really, but it feels like it. It's just something that we do. It's exciting to see all the pumpkins and the witches and all that stuff. I'm not a big fan of fall, but you wouldn't tell it's fall with the weather, at least here in Ohio. I hear it was quite toasty up in Canada today as well. Today here in Ohio, Northeast Ohio, was about 88 degrees Fahrenheit. That's warm. That's warm to me. It's almost hot. Not quite hot, but it's pretty warm. It's on the high end of the warm scale to me. Hot is mid-90s to me. But it was unusual for October. And that kind of ties in with my first story tonight. Before we do that, we got to talk about some of the conferences and conventions that are coming up. October is a big month for that. If you're out there and you pay attention to these things, it's a big month. In the ghost conference and convention scene for this year, we have coming up here in October the Gulf of Light Expo, October 5th and 6th in Columbus, Ohio. Down in Hilliard, Ohio, Columbus area. Parafest, Maine, October 11th in Vassalboro, Maine. Little Traverse Bay Parafest, October 11th and 12th in Petoskey, Michigan. The Fleetwood Paracon, October 12th in Brandy Station, Virginia. We had the third annual Central PA, I guess you'd just say Paracon Convention, a little play there on the PA part. October 18th through the 20th in Williamsport. I always call them Williamsport, Pennsylvania. And wrapping up October Hauntfest 2019, October 30th in Cayuga, Indiana. Don't miss that event. UFO events. We got one that I'm going to talk a little bit more in depth about coming up this weekend, actually starting on October 3rd and running through the 5th, is the Shag Harbor UFO Conference up way up there, up in Nova Scotia. And we'll talk a little bit more about that toward the end of the show tonight. There's some special information surrounding that event. We also have the Greater New England UFO Conference, October 4th in Leominster, Massachusetts. And also October 4th through the 6th, Alien Con in Dallas, Texas. And some cryptid events taking place, the Hanobia Bigfoot Festival and Conference, October 4th through the 5th in Hanobia, Oklahoma. We also have the South Carolina Bigfoot Conference down in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Watch out for the alligators. That's October 4th through the 6th, Myrtle Beach. El Batwitch Day takes place October 12th in Columbia, Pennsylvania. A great event. If you get a chance to go out there, it's way, way out there toward the Maryland end of PA. I was out there as a speaker last year, actually the headline speaker out there. Had a blast. I love that event. Couldn't get back out there this year, but love that event. It's a really, really nice, really unique event where they take you up to where these sightings were. It's a really neat little town as well. The 8th annual Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo in Chautauqua Lake, New York, October 12th. And the Toledo Bigfoot and Paranormal Conference, October 12th in Toledo, Ohio. During the week after that, on Wednesday, October 16th, I will be appearing at the Westerville Public Library in Westerville, Ohio. That's on the outskirts of Columbus, thereabouts on the northeastern area of Columbus. Westerville Public Library, I've been attending at that. This will be the 11th consecutive year. And I've put on, I think, about 13 or 14 events at this particular library. This year is going to be Creepy Creatures of Cryptozoology, the Tri-C. Creepy Creatures of Cryptozoology. I've done a couple of cryptozoology events down there at the library. It seems like nobody likes ghosts anymore. I don't know what the deal is. But people love the cryptid stuff. And so I'll be talking Bigfoot, Grassman, and probably pulling out some really weird creatures from all over the world that will hopefully give people the creeps. It's going to be a fun event. I usually start early and close it down usually every single year. For one reason or another, there is a police officer standing in my room at closing time. Again, different reasons why he's standing there, but usually we're the last ones out of the building. It's a good event. It's a lot of fun. And I usually lose my voice the next day. So good thing it's on a Wednesday, and I should be bringing you the show the night before on that. And that's what I have for October, I think. Let me double check here. Well, actually, a couple more here for cryptozoology. The 2019 Texas Bigfoot Conference in Jefferson, Texas, October 18th and the 19th. And then the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, October 25th and 27th in Kingsport, Tennessee. Got a story on Tennessee tonight as well. Weird stuff. So you can check out the entire list. There's only a few events left after all of these that I talked about. It's kind of wrapping up already. Convention's scene is getting quiet. So really in October is when I start getting a lot of the next year's events put together to put on this calendar. So if you know of some events, I already have a few that I've heard about that I've got written down. But if you know of events, either A, that I've missed for this year that are coming up and that I don't have listed, or B, events that you know are taking place preferably early next year, but really at any time next year, I'm going to start putting that together. I'm start getting that displayed on the website pretty much in October, because most of these events wrap up here in November. So I'm going to be behind the eight ball if I don't start getting this stuff put together and put on the website by the time the calendar flips to November and get these events for 2020. Gosh, it sounds weird to say that. 2020 already. So I want to get that updated and get that list out there. And I want this next year to have almost double the amount of events. I know there's more out there that I can get on this list. Very careful not to put too many on here, because I know sometimes these things get canceled sometimes. Sometimes they don't take place. So I'm kind of careful not to jump out there too fast and get this these events put on there too quickly, but I want the public to know about these. I love advertising for these things, talking about them here on the show, because it's a vital part of our culture as paranormal researchers and paranormal investigators to get together to talk about things in a room under neutral skies to talk about these things and talk shop and talk about our beliefs, our work, our efforts about these topics. I think it's a great experience for people who are not involved in the field but want to learn about it from other people as well. So check out these events, these conferences, conventions, and we shall see. And yeah, the year is wrapping up. It's getting close. I've got a little list going of my year-end topics. So at the end of the year, if you haven't been following the show that long, that's okay. I've only been doing it for, 11 years now? 11 years? Is it 11? Yeah, 11 years. So it's been a while. Every year since about, I think, 2010, I have been doing a wrap-up, and I call it the Top 10 Paranormal News Stories of the Year, or whatever year it is. And this year will be no different. And yes, the Storm Area 51 event, probably going to be up there close to the top. Whether it takes number one, I don't know. Is there anything else that maybe we talked about a little bit more? Is there anything else more viral than that? Probably not. You're right. But we'll see. Yeah, this year may not be suspenseful. It's been actually, to be honest with you, other than that story, it's been a pretty bleak year. And we have these years where some years are just super, super boring. And other years we have one major story after another coming out, and it's just overwhelming. And it's exciting at the same time. This year, not really. It's more like the former. It's more like it's been pretty boring. We've had some big stories, but they may not have been as a big deal if we've had other things coming out. But we will wrap up the year. I don't know when I'm going to start that. I usually like to do two an episode, perhaps. It depends, but I really haven't decided when I'm going to start that. Probably sometime in late November, early December. I'm not sure because the show usually, let's see. Well, Tuesday is going to be interesting this year. My wrap-up show might be earlier than expected because the last Tuesday is New Year's Eve, and the Tuesday prior to that is Christmas Eve. I remember actually when I was on a different network, we actually did shows those nights, I think. Yeah, I think we did, but they were pre-recorded, so it was no big deal. But yeah, I don't think I'm going to be doing those 2 weeks of December, unfortunately, the way the calendar lines up. But we'll cross that bridge and have all that stuff lined up for you. Kind of excited to get through this year because of a lot of the weak stories that we've had. But we'll see. It's not over yet. It's only October. We still have a quarter of the year left. So who knows? Usually November, December, don't count on anything major happening. But October, it's what we call a wild card month. Everyone's paying attention to this stuff. And some really weird stories are popping in, as we're going to talk about tonight. And we're going to start it off, like I said, we're going to be talking about Tennessee. So let's go down south and talk about a story that's encrypted news. Not quite exactly what I will call a cryptid story, but to me, it's very interesting. I really enjoy talking about these animals, especially this year. And throughout the years talking about mountain lions, one of my favorite creatures, favorite things to hopefully see in the wild one day. Even if I got to go out there and when I'm an old guy and drag a tennis ball behind me or try to run through the trees, if that's the last thing I see, that's great. I know that sounds morbid, but I really love to see one in the wild. I've been to Washington State. Got to go to California, I think. I think that's the place to see them. But down to southern Florida, not been able to see one there either. But maybe I might have a chance if I go down to Tennessee. And not just mountain lions, but alligators are also something I've been talking about a lot here on this show. And as you know, sure you're well aware, and most people have seen alligators in the wild in Florida. Florida's a place to go. There's a little, you can go play putt-putt golf and feed the alligators at some places down there. But they're pretty much everywhere. If you know where to look, if you're careful, you can see them. If you're really careful, you won't get bit one by one. So the alligators, they actually live in several other states that border the Gulf of Mexico and the Atlantic Ocean. So Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, East Texas, Southeast Oklahoma, as well as the southern tip of Arkansas, are pretty much the southern and western extremes for the alligator. Well, obviously, Florida, South Florida, is pretty much the southern extreme. And Louisiana, overall, actually has the largest number of alligators. It's pretty much all swamp. Have you ever been there? Louisiana is basically a couple of freeways, a few roads, and all swamp, pretty much. It is a beautiful state. It's a friendly state, but lots of alligators. I've seen quite a few down there in Louisiana. Of course, I was down in New Orleans, and a little bit too much, if you know what I'm saying, and really didn't see too many alligators in that area. But anyway, alligators also live in the coastal area of South and North Carolina and have moved into Southeast Virginia near the coast as well in the last few years. It's not even, if you go to Wikipedia, it's not even listed that they're living in Virginia, but they're there. They've been, according to the state of Virginia, they've been there for a few years, and they're very well established. They're breeding, so they're there. They're in Virginia. That's crazy. But now the Tennessee Wildlife Resources Agency is now reporting that alligators have been confirmed to be living in the southwest corner of Tennessee. Now, this means that alligators have moved up from Mississippi and could begin to move further north over the years if the climate continues to support it. And yeah, it's pretty warm today. I don't know the temperature down there in Tennessee anywhere, but I'm sure it's pretty warm. So these alligators, they will creep further north. And even if the cold does kill them off, they will eventually continue to move north. The TWRA states that they have not stocked alligators in the state, but that they have moved there on their own. So this is natural. They're moving into the state on their own. They're not fast runners over distance, but they can sprint pretty quick. So, you know, they're waddling their way through the waterworks up into Tennessee. The population of alligators in the region are also thought to be breeding. So this is an important piece. They're breeding. So the move is more than likely permanent. And these alligators have been noted to be slowly creeping north. So this isn't, you know, a dumped, escaped pet or anything like that. These are naturally living alligators that are living and breeding and moving north on their own, slowly moving their way north and west, which is a little scarier, I think, because they hit the Mississippi River and all of that, different areas, and that's really how they're spreading, too. They hit these big rivers. But it's weird because alligators were actually an endangered species in the early 1970s due to excessive hunting, but they rebounded very quick, and were delisted in 1987. American crocodiles, so a relative of the American alligators, fellow crocodilian, they're unable to survive in water below 45 degrees Fahrenheit. They pretty much drowned pretty quickly. But alligators can adapt to cold water and survive a lot longer and can even survive through a process called brumation, where they become dormant until the temperatures allow movement again. So everything kind of slows down. Their metabolism slows down. Their energy shuts off. And they basically just kind of lay there. There's photographs and videos of them with their snouts out of the ice. So even when water ice is over, they can survive for a short period of time. And, you know, this may take years for them to slowly move north until a really big cold, you know, cold snap kills them off. But, you know, they can survive in water. So I think Tennessee is not the furthest north extreme that we're going to see these creatures move. I think they could move into central and northern Tennessee in the next decade or so, if not earlier. In Kentucky, you're not out of the woods. It's not out of the realm of possibility. And I think Virginia as well, they're going to continue to move through Virginia, although southeast Virginia, there's the swamps kind of end where they're at. So it also takes the right kind of mix of water and kind of the brine, the kind of stuff that they swim in. And here in Ohio, there's actually plenty of pretty good spots that they could live up here too if they could survive and adapt to the water here, but probably not. I'm not worried about Ohio, although I have heard many reports of people dumping captured pets into the water of alligators that have survived for a few months until the winter comes. But probably, unless they're an established large creature, they're not going to be able to sustain cold weather. Now, mountain lions are also being spotted in Tennessee, with 10 confirmed sightings in the last few years. Unfortunately, these are thought to be only wandering males, and these are not breeding populations, although this is a good sign, because the males do venture out into areas, and usually, hopefully, the females are not too far behind. Unfortunately, these males, they get a little crazy, and looking for a mate, they end up usually finding an SUV, unfortunately. And this is the thing that happened back in 2008. A mountain lion from the Black Hills area of South Dakota wandered all the way to about 80 miles outside of New York City, where it was struck and killed by an SUV on the Wilbur Cross Parkway. So not out of the realm of possibility that they're headed to Tennessee. And Tennessee would be obviously much further west than New York. So the further west you get, the higher the possibility and potential for a breeding population to form. Now, the Black Hills of South Dakota are the furthest pretty much east area of breeding population. There's a fairly big breeding population there. Unfortunately, when they do wander into town or they wander out of the mountains, they're pretty much killed right away. Other states in the surrounding area have pretty much threatened South Dakota that they don't want their mountain lions. Keep your mountain lions, keep them out of our state. And so they've done quite a few different things. They do increase their hunting every now and again. They don't understand how that actually works against them, but nonetheless, they're trying to make money by killing mountain lions, but it's actually causing more of them to move if they just understood how these creatures were. The amount that are killed, unfortunately, are probably keeping them from being seen here in the United States. They're also moving through southern Canada as well. That's why we get a lot of sightings in Maine and the Northeast, because they're moving through different corridors up there through Canada as well to avoid the Mississippi River and some of the more populated areas here in North America. But we shall see. It's my hope that someday the mountain lions return to the East. I know that'll freak out a lot of people out. People are really excited about that, and there's really not a whole lot of area. These big cats need a lot of area to roam and to hunt. But it sure would make the deer a lot more manageable. Actually, deer car accidents would be cut almost in half. I would predict almost in at least a third, because known mountain lions in the area actually make deer not wander as much. They have a smaller range, so they don't wander as much. They don't cross as many roads. They don't put themselves out in the open as much. So that may actually help deer car collisions. Granted, I sure wouldn't want to hit a mountain lion. And there are, especially right now, lots of stories out in California of car mountain lion collisions. But exciting to hear that Tennessee has seen an influx of alligators and cougars. Pretty cool. And both alligators and cougars are protected by law in Tennessee, as these are expanding creatures and then do not yet have a hunting season. And in case you're wondering, you have to go to southern Florida to see this, but alligators do prey on cougars, mountain lions. They will prey on them. So apex predators, the alligator wins. Yep. And let's see what else we got. Well, we have Loch Ness Monster sightings. Imagine that. So the Loch Ness Monster, now if you've listened to the show, you paid attention to any of the paranormal news over the last couple of weeks, the Loch Ness Monster was pretty much scientifically eliminated earlier this year by Professor Neil Gemmell. Now, Gemmell, a geneticist at the University of Otago in New Zealand, took over 250 water samples at various locations and depths in the loch last year to seek out the life that exists in the water. No DNA of any large animal was discovered, but the biggest headline that came out of that entire story for some weird reason was that it might be a giant eel that could be the cause behind some of the sightings of the Loch Ness Monster. Even though the eels in Loch Ness rarely get over 3 feet long, that's not stopping the story from gaining traction for some reason. But this also hasn't stopped the sightings of the Loch Ness Monster, as two more official reports have come in. And since I'm not on video, you didn't get to see my air quotes when I said official reports. Elena Horka from the Czech Republic was filming near Urquhart Bay when she claims she saw a 30-meter long, which would be 98 feet to those of us here in the United States, 98-foot-long creature swimming near the castle, in the water near the castle. She was along the shoreline, really nowhere near the water, behind some shrubbery, from what I saw, a clip of the video. She was filming at a distance, and she was a distance from the shoreline and way far away from the water. So there was no real way she could tell exactly what she was filming. She probably couldn't even see if there were boats out of view in the area. So I don't know. I don't know what she saw. And she would have needed binoculars to see what was going on there. And that was the 15th official sighting. And the 16th official sighting was made by Irishman Ian O'Fadigan on September 2nd when he was watching the official Nessie cam. He says he saw something pop up out of the water about 3 feet and cover a distance of 20 to 25 feet before going back underwater and then repeating the same thing. Now, this latter sighting is probably just waves misinterpreted. I know that sounds mean, but O'Fadigan is pretty much an avid believer of the Loch Ness Monster. He probably has more official sightings registered under his name than anybody else. And people get excited when they see these waves. But waves, the water out there in Loch Ness acts a little bit different than what you're used to anywhere else, because it's a loch. It's long, it's a thin body of water, and it's surrounded by tall hillsides. So the wind acts really strange when it hits, especially anywhere near the center of the loch. It creates waves that look like a boat's going through, even when there's no boat. And that's usually what people see. They see these waves and they get all excited and they say, look, it's the Loch Ness Monster. And then it ends up on this sightings list. And probably ends up on the show as well. I know they're probably, most of these sightings, if not all of these sightings, are misinterpretation. But to me, I think it's the culture of this, of the belief of the Loch Ness Monster that's more fascinating to me than the actual stories. It's so weird that no matter how many stories come out about the Loch Ness Monster, people continue to believe in it. This latest story about the DNA search, it's just one of a couple stories. So a few years ago, there was evidence uncovered that innkeepers in the Loch Ness area came to have a meeting that said that basically they're going to bring up this Loch Ness Monster story that had been documented over the centuries. They're going to bring it back into popularity in the 1930s to bring people to the area. So that was uncovered, and yeah, didn't really make a dent. So this year alone, 16 official sightings, which brings a record number of sightings for the 21st century in any given year. And that's according to the official Loch Ness Monster Sightings Register, which is kept by Gary Campbell. You can read more about these sightings at lochnesssightings.com. If you want a breakdown of all the sightings of the Loch Ness Monster, if you got that kind of time on your hands, you can check it out. Like I usually mention with these stories, the Loch Ness Monster is worth about $50 million U.S. dollars a year to the local economy. So that's quite a spur. And so there's no real incentive for them to say, yeah, you know what? There's no monster here. Of course, they're never going to say that ever, because they sure want the people to continue to show up and pay money and see this thing. So, yes, there are live cams set up, and that's where this last sighting, actually, from Ian O'Fadigan, the official Nessie cam. And I don't know if I have the link to that, but there are plenty of I know there's cams, and I know there's a number of people actually who have turned in sightings from the official Loch Ness Monster cam. So it's probably something, if you got time. But I know that's lochness.co.uk. It's dark right now. It's pretty dark, so you're not going to see anything right now. But yes, lochness.co.uk/livecam is where you can find the See Nessie on the Net live stream. I guess it's they flash this, but it's Urquhart Castle image. And that's really where most of the sightings are. That's because there's more people in that area. There's also more boat traffic, and it's kind of a weird intersection where, geographically, where the wind is probably a lot weirder in that area than anywhere else in the lock. So it's kind of a perfect storm. And I guess you can watch their sheep here as well. So I'll throw that link in the chat room if you're live in the chat room. So you can see that for yourself. Granted, yeah, right now it's dark. It's dark up there. Out in Loch Ness. I don't know what time it is out there, but it's pretty, it's probably pretty early. Well, 10, 11, probably about 1 o'clock in the morning, I think. I don't know. Well, that didn't work. Try that again. Now, what city would be out there? Glasgow? I don't know. There you go. There's a clickable link. Ghost stories? I'm not sure if I'm sure there's plenty of ghost stories. We're talking about the United Kingdom. Where else would you have ghost stories? Let's see. Glasgow. So Glasgow, it's 1:34 a.m. So you probably got a few hours till that camera comes up. So good luck with that. I'm sure there's tons of ghost reports out there in different parts of Scotland, especially Urquhart Castle, kind of an old castle. I'm pretty sure they do ghost walks there as well. Pretty sure. Haven't been there yet. It's on my bucket list to be one of the people that spend a little short of the $50 million U.S. dollars a year to the local economy. I'd like to spend... yeah, maybe a couple hundred at most. But yeah, we shall see. Loch Ness Monster not going away anytime soon, despite all the science and things against it. And with that, we're going to move to UFO news. And I've had a few emails. Some people are asking me. There's basically more than two stories, but two types of stories. So one of them is, why am I not talking about these big announcements happening with former Blink-182 singer Tom DeLonge. He's making headlines right now. Why am I not talking about it? And the headlines that's coming out are about these strange pieces of metal he's claimed to have found, claimed to have gotten, acquired, sent. I don't know how you want to pronounce or, you know, phrase that, but he's got these in his possession. The To The Stars Academy. Well, we knew this a while ago. This is the same story over and over and over again. I don't know why people are still writing about it right now. I know during the Storm Area 51 event, I'm pretty sure they put out a press conference about this. So that's probably why it's still going a couple of weeks after that. But I don't know why they're milking this story. But it's the same thing. They've not had anything new. It's the same story. And they basically got caught, as you, if you've, we hear listening about that, that story when we talked about it, they pretty much got busted that their so-called UFO evidence is actually a photo of known metals. They just used it off the internet. I don't remember what week that was. Episode 402. So July 30th. Go back and listen to that episode. I did talk about it. And the story title is TTSA Shows Off Their Rocks. And they got busted on their evidence. But they're still pushing it out there. I don't know why it's still in the paranormal news. I don't get it. Why it's being talked about as it's brand new stuff. It's not brand new stuff. So I'm not talking about it unless something new comes out about it. And I'm also not talking about, I've had a couple of emails about this stuff on Mars. I'm not talking about it. These are just silly people that are seeing what they want to see. They're actually monetizing these stories. They're getting to the British tabloids, and the British tabloids are paying for them to write these stories, basically. And people are paying or allowing this person to get paid by watching their YouTube channels. And I'm done with it. You know, I've covered these stories in the past, but I'm no longer going to contribute to their retirement funds when they're making up stories, fake stories. There's better things to talk about. I would rather talk about alligators and mountain lions in Tennessee than it would fake photographs of purported aliens, UFOs, artifacts, and different weird stuff that people are seeing in shadows on Mars, because it's crazier to me. But I don't know. To each his own. This isn't a conspiracy theory driven show, even though I do occasionally talk about that kind of stuff. But to me, there's more important things in the paranormal to talk about when you only have an hour. That's just how I see it. So there are shows out there that do talk about it. So, you know, have fun. Sorry. I mean, I could easily talk about stuff like that and probably double the amount of people that listen to the show. But, you know, I don't like leading people on. I don't like telling people things are real when I'm pretty sure they're not, or I have evidence to go to the contrary. You know, this show is about the truth, but not the truth as far as the government's lying and there's cover-ups and conspiracies. I'm sure there is, but not everything is a conspiracy. I mean, the stuff that we're talking about here, I talk about known facts, known information. I keep it real. I want you guys to know the truth, because some people do twist this stuff for their own entertainment or to fool you, or they don't get all the information correct. So that's what I'm doing here, bringing you the correct information week in, week out. And the story that just won't go away. I've tried to shovel it, but I can't do it. It just won't go away. The party seems like this story seems like so long ago, but it's been less than 2 weeks. But the legal battles have just begun, just like we predicted would happen. Yes, Connie West, owner of the Little Ailey Inn in Rachel, Nevada, was the spot for alien stock and where Storm Area 51 creator Matthew Roberts had pulled out of that event just over a week before the events began. We could tell there were some bad feelings rising during this time, and there were statements made about the event and what Connie West had said. A lot of stuff sounded very contradictory. and I knew something was wrong. Somebody was fabricating something. There's always three versions of the truth: what he said, what she said, and what really happened. And now we're seeing both what he said and she said, and possibly a little bit of interpretation here in the middle. And the truth is slowly coming to light. So Connie West filed a formal complaint back on September 17th against Matthew Roberts, Brock Daly, Frank DiMaggio, John Greco, and the Hidden Sound, who were behind putting on this event, the Alien Stock event. The complaint states that Roberts and his group withheld funds from sponsorship and made defamatory and misleading statements about the event, including that it was completely canceled. And I argued with a lot of people online about this who were writing stories or making statements that, yes, the complete event is canceled. And I said, no, it's not. It's still going on under Connie West. But his statements made it sound like nothing was happening. And I'm sure put a very big dent in the fact that hardly anybody showed up. I'm sure there would have been a lot more people had he not made the statement that the event was completely off. I'm sure a lot of people changed their travel itineraries at that point, but you know, how many more people would have showed up? Who knows? West states that a verbal agreement that Roberts and his associates would share the financial responsibility never surfaced. The group failed to provide any of the funding they had promised, yet intended to take the earnings from the event after expenses. Roberts and his group were supposed to help pay for security and services to help the event be a success, but seemed to be looking at other avenues to profit from this craze, and are even thought to have taken $70,000 in sponsorship money that was given to the event for their own personal use. Roberts and his group ultimately pulled out of West's property for the event, citing a lack of planning and structure, even though, according to West, they had done nothing of what they had promised to do, which would have made the event safe. Now, they made public statements stating that West had not taken care of things which they had promised to do, and had used the Alien Stock name to promote a competing event, even though the Alien Stock theme was a collaboration between Roberts' group and Connie West. So that's why I was confused as to why Connie West was still using the Alien Stock name. But this explains it. That wasn't Matty Roberts's complete and whole possession, his complete idea, even though he says it was, that he held that idea. But if there was a collaboration, if they were working together, then you can't really take the name away from somebody else. So this is not looking good. But West would seem to have the upper hand with all this, with this complaint. She's got a very, very thick paper trail of expenses. But with no written contract, this is just a case, again, of he said, she said, unless a court can sift beyond the words into the facts and put things together. Attorneys for Roberts and his group dispute, quote, almost everything, unquote, alleged in the lawsuit. So I wonder what they do agree with here. And again, I'm pretty sure that we all knew this was going to happen. It's just a matter of time. And thankfully, but we'll see if any of the injured people step forward and sue. But thankfully, nobody died from the incident, except for two cows, which I'm sure they're not represented in this case. So there was no written contract as far as what I have heard, but a verbal agreement. How far that's going to go in court, probably not very far as a paper airplane, probably. But we'll see. This is probably more than likely going to go to court. I don't see Roberts being able to settle this out of court. And I don't know. What does this do for Alien Stock Part 2? I don't think this makes it a favorable repeat of an event at this point. All right, so let's get out of Nevada. Let's go to Nova Scotia. Sounds good this time of the year. So this coming weekend, marks the 52nd anniversary of the Shag Harbor incident and is also the annual Shag Harbor UFO Festival, which I mentioned earlier in the show, put on by the Shag Harbor Incident Society, which also operates a museum in the area. Shag Harbor is in Nova Scotia, which is in Canada, in case you weren't aware, and is the location of a UFO crash that is sometimes referred to as Canada's Roswell. If Roswell was underwater, I guess. On the night of October 4th, 1967, multiple witnesses saw four orange lights floating through the sky, and five teenagers watched the flashing lights as they suddenly veered towards the harbor surface. They stated that the lights didn't dive into the water but seemed to float on it about a half mile from shore. The immediate thought was that a plane crashed, and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police quickly arrived. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police Constable Ron Pound was already in the area and actually witnessed the lights himself. Constable Pound and others at the site were amazed to see a yellow light moving on the water and leaving a yellowish foam behind it. The light slowly disappeared, either moving off in the distance or sinking below the surface. So nobody really knows. I've not heard anyone say any kind of logical explanation to this. Swamp gas? I don't know. Nothing was discovered at the bottom of the ocean where the craft was thought to have entered the water. The story, similarly to Roswell, is that it was popular when it happened. It kind of faded away. Nobody really thought of it. But all of a sudden in the 1990s, started to gain a lot of traction. And many people had a lot of hypotheses about what might have happened. The Shag Harbor UFO Conference includes multiple speakers. I think there's seven different people speaking at the event. There's also a Skywatch, a witness and experiencer panels, a bus tour of the area, as well as a reenactment of the incident. I don't know if they're going to crash something in the water or how they're going to do that, but pretty cool. Yes, I definitely would not want to be up there in the wintertime at all. So picture it this way. Shag Harbor is located at the southern tip of Nova Scotia and is southwest of Halifax and is essentially, if you were to draw a line from Bar Harbor, Maine, out into the ocean, it's about 140 miles off the shore from Bar Harbor, Maine. Beautiful place. Too much fog, but a beautiful place. Every time I'm there, it's foggy. I don't know why. Now, the interesting part of the story, not that the UFO conference is not interesting. I think it's pretty cool. But that's not the only cool thing happening. Now, already earlier this year, along with this event, the Royal Canadian Mint had created a limited number of coins, 4,000 to be exact, celebrating the event. The coins show people pointing toward the four orange lights, and when the coin is viewed in the dark with an accompanying black light, flashlight, so you get a flashlight, you buy this coin, I think it's like $100 US, and the coin's only worth 20, you get a black light flashlight that so you can take it in the bathroom and it lights up. So when you use this black light on it, details of the craft are seen glowing. Well, unfortunately, according to the Royal Canadian Mint website, when I first read the story, it said 88% sold out. But when I checked the website, it flashed up and said that it was sold out. But the website still says 95% sold. So I don't know who to believe. But I guess it's gone. And I do have a picture for you in case you're wondering what it looks like. Now, it's not really completely lit up, but it shows what it would kind of sort of look like if it was lit up. But what's going on here? Invalid image. Okay, so extra dimensions here. When you're on listening live in the chat room, sometimes I post pictures, sometimes I post links. Sometimes I post both, And sometimes I don't post any, but right now I'm going to post some of these Canada coins. And not only was there one done this year on the Shag Harbor UFO incident, but there was also one done last year as well, which is pretty cool when you think about it. See, it's not going up. There it goes. Pretty cool. So you can see the there on the left is what it normally looks like. Then on the right, it's lit up a little bit more. You can see the people pointing toward the orange lights, and you can see this craft. Now, you also see below that there was also 2008 coins. So last year, the Royal Canadian Mint also highlighted the Falcon Lake incident, which occurred in Manitoba. On May 20th, 1967, a man witnessed a UFO land, but as he approached the UFO, it took off and set his clothes on fire. What a wild night that is. Leaving him with burns. So this commemorative coin also features a blacklight activated feature, which shows a beam of light coming down onto the victim, which glows in the dark. Pretty sinister, creepy, but pretty cool at the same time. It looks really, really neat. Unfortunately, this limited edition coin also had 4,000 pieces minted and is also sold out. These two coins are the first two in a series titled Canada's Unexplained Phenomena. Pretty cool that they're doing this. As far as I know, I don't think the United States has done this. I think they did one with Bigfoot a long time ago, but I think that was in the 80s or 90s. They were, I think, $100 a piece. I do have links to those. U.S. So let's see. Let me throw... It's a pretty long link, but I'll throw the link in the chat room. I do have links to those, so you can check out those coins. They're pretty cool, but yeah, they're pretty pricey for $20 coins. So you're going to pay $100 for extra black light with it. But I don't know. They got swooped up pretty quick. So there's a link there. You can click on the link and see how much these puppies are. $129 Canada and $97 US was what they were going for. You get them in a little box. Oh, that looks so nice. Could have been a nice Christmas present for me, but not going to happen, I guess. Oh, well. So they were, about $100 a piece, but pretty cool. I really like that. Not just the fact that they did this, but that they're doing unexplained phenomena, which who knows what else they're going to put on here. But also that they're activated by the light like that. That's pretty creepy, but pretty cool at the same time. Very impressed with that. Very nice thing. And last, certainly not least, only $20. Yeah, I don't know. People pay a lot of money for coins here in the United States. Well, it's a collector's item. That Mercury dime, well, it's only worth 10 cents. If you put it in the vending machine, you're not going to get anything. You're not going to get $100. Anyway, one last story, kind of a gruesome story, kind of shocking to me. But unfortunately, this is not the first time that we've talked about a story similar to this. Federal authorities are investigating a botched exorcism in the state of Arizona. Pablo Martinez from Tucson, Arizona, was arrested and charged with first-degree murder following the death of a six-year-old boy back on September 26th. Romelia Martinez told investigators Pablo was bathing the boy and another child when she heard gurgling. She ran into the bathroom, seeing him holding the boy under the tub's faucet. She yelled for her husband to stop and called a pastor as well as 911. She stated that Pablo attempted CPR on the boy and poured cold water on him. There's a reason for the cold water, and Pablo admitted that he was trying to cast out a demon that he said was inside the boy. He stated that he held the child under hot water for between 5 and 10 minutes. The boy suffered burns to his head, elbows, and forearms. There was no official cause of death listed for the boy as of yet. The incident occurred at the Pascua Yaqui Tribe Native American Reservation in Arizona. The boy and Romelia Martinez are enrolled members of the tribe, but Pablo is not. And federal authorities investigate homicides when suspects, victims, or both are members of federally recognized tribes. This is a really, really disgusting and disturbing story. I don't know. My biggest question, and this story is still kind of coming into focus, but my question is was Romelia aware that Pablo had suspicion of this boy being possessed prior to this this bathing incident? Was there any signs or symptoms? Because this could be basically a cover-up for something, which I'm fearing could be. But either way, it's really disturbing how people let their beliefs get in the way and dictate to how things like this unravel and how they treat people. And sometimes people with mental disorders are viewed as people who are possessed and unfortunately are treated in harmful ways that could lead to their – that have led, actually, in fact, to their death. We've talked about, unfortunately, here on the show over the course of the last 11 years, probably five or six of these stories, and I'm sure there were plenty more out there. He was not a priest, from what I'm aware, but he wanted to perform an exorcism. I don't know where he learned how to hold people underwater for that. I've never seen that tactic or technique on any TV show that I'm aware of, which I'm sure is where a lot of people get their training. But that's where I wonder if there's more to the story. But that's really, I've only seen just as one little piece of this. So again, the boy died back on September 26th. So it really hasn't been that long. I think they're still doing an autopsy, still trying to determine the actual cause of death, whether it was from the burns or drowning. So, yeah, not an official exorcism, but somebody who tried to do one. And obviously, Pablo Martinez, probably not trained in exorcisms, obviously, because that's really not how you do it. Anyway, so yeah, that's a warning. And it seems like people who take it into their own hands, even we've even had Catholic priests who were supposedly purportedly trained in this, have accidentally or intentionally killed people over these exorcisms, and we don't really know the exact reason for their behaviors, whether they were possessed or not, probably not, because again, it's usually just the perspective of the people that are doing these exorcisms. So sad story. Hate to end the night like that, but scary season around the corner. I started watching Gremlins last night. It should be a Christmas movie. Why is Gremlins a Halloween type movie? I mean, if that what's the movie with what's his name? It's a Christmas movie, but it's an action flick. Or the big building, the terrorists are in the building. Gosh, what's that guy's name? The bald headed guy. He's got like four of those movies. But anyway, Halloween is here, and we got to enjoy it. We got to embrace it. And hopefully not too many crazy, wacky stories like that last one occur, but we shall see what happens in the next few weeks. And I do appreciate everybody in the chat room for showing up tonight and listening live. If you're listening live and not in the chat room, well, I also appreciate you. And if you're listening to this recorded, yes, Die Hard, thank you. I went through my mind, but I couldn't remember. Die Hard, why is it a Christmas movie? Because it happens during Christmas. Well, Gremlins happens during Christmas, too. You don't see TBS showing that. Anyway, I will see you next week. But for now, sweet dreams. Keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck. And always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.